Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey, we're the Board Game Bros.
I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And board game designers in real life.
Indeed we are. And this is another episode of our podcast, Board Game Bros, where we talk about board game design, board gaming as a hobby, anything board games.
Yep.
So this is our end of the month episode. The last Saturday of the month, we like to do an episode where instead of focusing on one game in particular, we instead focus on one game mechanic and we explore it in depth. We really get into the nitty gritty with it and we use examples from many different games with that mechanic in our discussion.
Yeah. So, last time, last month, we talked about deck building,
mm-hmm.
and this is a mechanic that, if you look it up on BoardGameGeek, it will be lobbed in with deck building.
I mean, it's kind of interesting that this is kind of the, I would say, the opposite of deck building in some ways, because in deck building, you start with a small number of cards, and there's a large pool of cards, and you add to your small number. And in the game that we're playing now, you start with a very large pool of cards, and you sort of whittle it down and select it. It's cards from it to get a much smaller condensed grouping of cards that you play with.
Yeah, we are of course talking about card drafting.
Yes, we are going to talk today about card drafting.
Specifically that sort of hand drafting mechanic that has sort of ingrained itself in gaming. There's many types of card drafting, but
yeah, technically deck building is a form of card drafting if you consider drafting as a definition to be selecting cards from a group that multiple people are selecting from.
Yeah.
But we're talking about hand drafting specifically, which, Matthew, could you give a short description of what hand drafting is?
So, I guess the best way to put it would be each player is given a hand of cards in which they select from and pass other cards on to the rest of the players.
And in most examples, you're just selecting one card from the hand and passing the rest of the cards to the next player.
Yes.
For them to pick one. So the selection of cards is slowly winnowed down player by player.
Yeah, and you do this until there's no more cards in those hands.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as games go, sometimes that's the whole game.
Yeah. So Matthew, could you tell us a little bit of history? Hold on. Our dog is barking. All right, so tell us about the history of card drafting.
So, from what I could tell, in an article written by Mark Rosewater, the lead designer of Magic the Gathering right now, he wrote this article in 2010. To his account, card drafting began with Magic the Gathering to an extent. Richard Garfield, the original designer of Magic, had done baseball card drafts of a sort of like fantasy baseball aspect, and he wanted to incorporate that in Magic the Gathering.
So,
and the original form of card drafting involved putting all the cards in like a grouping of cards along a table and picking from what's on the table, but as
so it's
time
sort
went
of
on,
it's inspired by like the drafting that happens in actual sports.
Yeah,
you know, when teams are selecting players to add to their team from college graduates, it's the same deal with how this drafting worked. You know, with baseball cards, it's like the exact same thing. But Richard Garfield had a twist on drafting in mind.
Yeah, since they were using booster packs as like a release model. He sort of started with that, where you would open the packs and just use those packs to draft from. And that's sort of where a lot of the card drafting we know of today comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The most likely first appearance of modern hand drafting would be at the 1996 Magic the Gathering Pro Tour.
Mm-hmm. So Magic was published in 1993.
Yeah.
And 1996 is the first professional drafting example in Magic's history. So drafting has been around for a while.
Circa 1993 to 1996.
Over 20 years, drafting has been around. Although there's not many games that use this as a mechanic, at least primarily as their mechanic, I would say. We did a little bit of research. We played a bunch of different card drafting games leading up to this. And we got a pretty short list of games that we considered to be purely drafting games.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Let's get into the strategy involved in a drafting game.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, when you're talking about the hand drafting mechanic, the mechanic in general, brings a lot of strategy to the table, regardless of how the game is designed.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main reasons why people use the mechanic, is for some of the strategy things that are sort of like hinted at. Mm-hmm.
It's an entirely new skill. And also, it's interesting that drafting as a mechanic is something that is almost a little difficult to teach within like a game's rules. It's sort of something that you pick up outside of the game. It's like a metagame.
Right.
Almost. Yeah.
Because the rule is really just pick one card, pass the rest along,
mm-hmm.
and take the hand you're passed, repeat.
And in a game, you might take that and you might look at the cards and say, okay, pick the best card, pass along, or pick a card that works with the cards that I've already picked, pass the rest along. But there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
So, if Matthew, do you want to go into some of the strategy involved into drafting?
Yeah, it sort of is in, like, sort of tiers of skill level you can look at it.
Yomi, so if you will.
Well, not really. So, you talked about the base level, which is your own hand. Then there is thinking about what you passed to the next player. So, like,
Yomi level two.
When you pass your hand along, you're passing, you know, however many cards. You can look at the cards you're passing and be like, so the second best card in this, or the best card that I'm passing, is this type of card. So my opponent to the left of me will most likely be drafting more of that type of card if I give them more of it. And so there's that. Or even if you're down to two cards, you know at least one that the person to your left will have.
Mm-hmm.
And this gets like to be a bigger deal in certain games than others. The next tier is what you're getting passed. If you're getting passed a lot of a certain type of card, you can take that. But I know a lot of games will have you pass cards in different directions throughout the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Seven Wonders, you pass to the left. Age 2, you pass to the right. Age 3, you pass to the left. So if you're getting passed a lot of a certain type of card, then in Age 2, when you're passing to the right, you can always pass them very few of that type of card, and you can try to pick it. At least the good ones, in hopes that you sort of dry them up during that phase. And then there's, like, you can look all over the table, and this sort of, again, depends on what game you're playing. Like, in Magic Booster Drafts, you can't really tell what people all the way across the table from you are drafting.
Mm-hmm.
If you're really, really observant in sort of, like, thinking logically, then you might be able to guess what, like, two people to your left or two people to your right are doing. But, yeah, there's all that. And
right.
Even then, you know, there's trying to fake people out, and there's the idea of you might want to try to pass certain cards along so that they go all the way around to you.
Mm-hmm. Wheeling a card.
Wheeling, yes.
Yeah, so to use your example, like, if you're getting passed a lot of cards of one particular strategy, then you know that other people aren't picking that strategy. So you can feel assured later in the draft to pass cards of that strategy around that are at higher priority to you, because you know that they have a better chance of coming back around to you, and you can instead take more priority picks before that.
Exactly.
There's also, with the idea of what you're passing, knowing that you're passing certain cards, so you might not want to pass other cards that work like with those cards later on, there's also the idea of hate drafting, where if you can tell that there is a strategy absent from the cards you're being passed, then you can obviously assume that other people are picking it. And later on, if there's a very high priority card for that strategy, even if it doesn't benefit you, there's always the option of taking it rather than giving it up for another person, just to make other strategies weaker.
And in some games, you'll even find that hate drafting helps to get rid of cards that are good against your strategy.
Yep.
So instead of thinking about what other people are doing, you can think about what they want to do in response to you and go at that level of play.
To bring our first game example into the discussion, we talked about this game at the end of our Gateway game series in episode 7.
Yep.
For aesthetics, we talked about Seven Wonders, which again was designed by Antoine Bauza and published in 2010. And this game actually comes up with a way for you to use hate drafting in a new way. So there's a mechanic in Seven Wonders where you can upgrade your mechanic, or you can upgrade your wonder by spending a card rather than playing it. And you can also just pitch cards for money in that game rather than playing them. So the game, it rewards you a little bit for hate drafting certain cards from your opponents, because, and it doesn't it's not as good as if you had played a good card for yourself. Usually the bonus you get from your wonder, you know, you can only do that so many times, so eventually it runs out. And the amount of gold that you get from pitching a card isn't worth as much as playing certain other cards, but it's still like a little bit of an encouragement to hate draft other people, which is one interesting thing that a game did to sort of reinforce a drafting metagame idea.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want to have to, you, like, when you look at the rule that says you have to get rid of a card essentially to put it into your wonder, to upgrade your wonder, that immediately tells you, like, oh yeah, I don't want to do that with a good card.
Right.
I want to do that with a card I don't want.
You might think, like, okay, I'll just do that with a bad card then. But then you get the idea, like, oh yeah, my opponent wants this card. I don't want them to have it. I can't play it, but there is something I can do with it.
Yeah.
And so you do it then. And that, again, becomes much more important when you know that it's the person directly next to you that you're feeding cards into. Because sometimes if they're across the table, maybe you're fine with passing it to the next person and they can have to deal with it. But other times you might just want to just take care of it right then and there.
You know, that makes me think there is sort of this ticking time or like hot potato aspect of drafting sometimes, where it's like you want to use your pick for something good, but that means you can kind of hold the other players at gunpoint, because like if they pass that card that's good for a given player, then they might have to worry about it being played. Do you know what I mean? Like if a player on the table would really like this card, but you like another card in the pack, you can try to take the card you like and be like, that's not my problem, I'm just gonna pass this card, you can deal with
because you're really only most responsible for the person you're giving cards to.
Yeah.
So if they're across the table, then you can just hope that the person sitting next to them will take care of it for you. And it, you might be able to even predict it if you can tell that the other cards in the pack aren't very good for that player.
Yeah, so I'm sure that concept is like, there's a game theory dilemma named after that concept of just passing the buck, for lack of a better term.
So there's some design space there where you can help to reward players in certain ways by for performing these basic drafting metagame decisions. I think one thing that's really interesting about card drafting as a mechanic compared to many other mechanics related to card games is that it creates a great deal of strategic complexity because of all the baked-in metagame strategy with very few cards.
Yeah.
So, for example, and very simple cards, too. So, for example, this is using a game that isn't a drafting game, but the game Love Letter is a really basic game. Because each card has a number on it. There's just a small number of cards between 1 and 9. And at the end of a round of gameplay, whoever has the highest number wins. And certain cards can be discarded to perform certain effects. So if you can imagine, you can make that into a drafting game, where instead of you just constantly drawing cards and playing cards, you have to draft the card you're going to play that turn, and then play it, and then whoever has the highest number wins, you know, after all the actions have been done. And so those are very simple cards. And the minimum number of cards that you need for a drafting game is 2 plus the number of players. So that's a game with an interesting level of strategic complexity with only 2 plus the number of player cards.
You know, the game Citadels,
right,
which is a hand drafting game that uses only one hand at a time, it also has a lot of complexity for like the few cards it has. And what I think is funny is you mentioned 2 plus the number of players. That's more or less how many cards are going to be dealt in any round of Citadels. Mm-hmm. Sort of, because I just think that's funny.
Yeah, and Citadels was designed by Bruno Faiduti in 2000. And then Love Letter was designed by Seiji Kanai in 2012.
Yeah.
Just for reference.
And I think those games where it's a very simple card that has really big, like, I don't know, effects on the game, I almost feel like that can make it more interesting just because it gives you more time to think about everything other than the card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes when you have really crazy cards, it's hard to tell which one's better or which one you'd want to pass, or even just you spend time reading the cards.
Right. I think one of the things that drafting has going against it is that it is not easy to learn to begin with, and it's not forgiving to newer players.
Yeah.
Because you have to do a lot of split-second analysis and card comparison in the game. And if you're playing with experienced people, for the experienced people, it can be frustrating because the inexperienced person has to read every card diligently and think about it and determine whether or not one card is better than another. We were playing a game with our dad the other night, and it took him very long to make many of the initial drafting decisions because he had never played the game before. He had never really played a drafting game before. And so just having to go through what every card does and then weigh all of those options against one another and then have to do that a number of more times as new hands were passed to him, it's a lot to take in.
Yeah,
and it's hard to know that you're making a good decision.
Yeah, and I think it can also be intimidating if a new player plays with veteran players. Because they kind of get this idea that they're not good enough, you know? They kind of have to, like, keep getting at it. And, like, you know, they might feel rushed even if they're not being rushed. Just because all the other players are picking quickly.
Right, so it's a lot. It rewards you for knowing what every card possible does. But it really punishes you if you don't know, especially like in a game like Seven Wonders. If you don't know exactly all the different cards that are available in each age, at least age one and two, it's always the same. Age three, there's a couple variable cards, but for the most part, it's the same. Then it's hard to know that you should be picking certain cards before others in a draft and certain cards in one age so that in later age you can do that. And sometimes games attempt to help you with that. But it's still a lot. It's still looking at a handful of cards and having to judge all of them against one another until you can decide which one is the best pick for you.
Yeah, and even then, like, some games don't give players a whole lot of direction before they look at their hand. Like, Seven Wonders, I think it does this well that it gives you, like, sort of a hint at what you might want to try to pick.
Yeah, it does sort of let you know, like, okay, these cards produce resources, and you need resources to play these cards.
Yeah, but, like, your other games, you just kind of, like, choose a card, and it doesn't tell you, like, this card might go well with your, you know, board, like in Seven Wonders, or something like that, or your hand of cards in, like, Citadels.
Right. I think... one thing that you can help new players in the design of a game is to make the cards very simple, what they do. So, like, in Sushi Go.
Yeah.
Sushi Go is a game. It was designed by Phil Walker Harding in 2013. Sushi Go is a really simple card drafting game where you're attempting to make combinations of sushi by drafting a hand of, what is it, seven cards, one by one. You know, you draft Maki rolls, and if you get a number of Maki rolls, you get so many points. You draft Nigiri, and if you drafted Nigiri after you've drafted Wasabi, you get a number of points. And if you get Tempura in a pair or something else in a whatever. So, I mean, the cards all just sort of tell you how many points they give you. And there's only, like, I don't know, seven or eight kinds of cards. So when it's purely these very simple numeric, you know, ideas like, okay, this card is worth X points and this card is worth X points, and that's all it says. It doesn't say, like, this card is worth this many resources and this many gold points, and so at the end of the game it might be worth this many points. It's just like, this card's worth 2 points, and if you get another one, it's worth 4 points. Then that's one way to make the drafting very easy for a beginner player, having the cards be very simple.
Another way that you can make drafting a lot easier for a new player, we talked about this on the Seven Wonders episode, but you can structure your game in a way that either eases the player into complexity as it goes, or in a way that almost clearly shows new players what their priorities should be.
Right. So if you don't want to build a game where all the cards are just these basic Sushi Go worth 2 point cards, you want to actually have some interesting strategic depth within the way that the cards interact with one another, then yeah, Seven Wonders and does this thing
where... Not just with the ages in Seven Wonders.
Yeah.
But also the fact that resource cards that you need to build everything else are very clearly defined in these two different colors that stand out in the hand.
Yeah, and they have different card borders.
Yeah. So, at a glance, you know, you can look at your hand. That's the other thing. There is a graphic design element to designing deck builders.
And these are all examples of deck...
I mean, not deck building, card drafting
games. These are all examples of card drafting games where the mechanics are written on the cards themselves. There's one game that does an interesting thing that takes the mechanics off the cards, and instead all the cards are just suits. And that is a game called Nevermore, which was designed by Kurt Covert in 2015. And in Nevermore, you're only drafting suits of cards. And then the gameplay continues after that, where players go one by one, suit by suit, kind of like spades. Whoever has the highest number of that suit gets an effect based on the number that they have collected minus the number that the second player has collected the most of. And also it uses a slightly different drafting formula, but that's an example of a game where it completely removes the complexity from the having to read the cards and understand what each card does individually and forcing a player to weigh those options against one another, and instead just has it in suits and says, like, okay, well, obviously if you want to do this thing, then you're going to need all the suits, as many of that suit as you can get. So you look at your hand, you say, I'll keep these, I'll pass the rest, and then eventually I'll have the most swords. So that means I can deal damage to somebody this turn.
Of course, that's a game that has a rather low variance in, like, the number of cards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the number of unique cards is a little lower. So that game can afford to do that. Whereas a game that might have, like, 10 to 20 even different types of cards might not be able to do that type of mm-hmm. gameplay.
It also has very few cards in hand.
Yeah.
It only uses 5 cards in your hand at any given point. And a lot of these drafting games, you'll start with, like, more than that, and you'll whittle it down to less and less.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. So we talked about where all my notes go?
We talked about the strategy and sort of what that implies in the design a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you want to get a little further into design?
There's one more strategy thing that I wanted to talk about. No, never mind. Yeah, let's talk about other stuff.
So there is a lot of things that drafting adds to a game, like, just by the inclusion of the mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
I know we sort of hinted at this, but drafting inherently has elements of, like, mind games and deduction and bluffing and intrigue. And it also can be a very tense atmosphere, which, in one hand, this makes it not that great for party games,
mm-hmm.
at least party games that are meant to be, like, funny party games. I mean, Sushi Go is, like, a light strategy game that's sort of a party game, but it lends itself really well to these high tension themes of, like, intrigue and deception and all that.
Mm-hmm. Are we talking sort of, like, about the flavor application?
Well, this is more just, yeah, flavor application in general, but even as, like, a mechanical thing, it's a good way to, if you don't know what sort of mechanic you want to use for your game, but you have a theme in mind, it's a good way to sort of bring all of the luggage that it carries with it into your game,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I also think it's starting to be more popular, that it's going to become like deck builders, where it shares a lot of strategies between games, or a lot of concepts and fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get a game that's easy to be understood by competitive players. So if you want to make a game that's geared towards, like, you know, really, really crazy, like, Johnny or Spike players, this might be a good mechanic, since those people might already know how the games work.
That's a good point. And you might even, you know, as a hobbyist, you might just play, like, Sushi Go a couple times with your friend group, to get them, you know, familiar with a lot of the card drafting concepts before you introduce them to slightly more complex games. Honestly, yeah. Sushi Go is probably a better slot than Seven Wonders.
For gateway drafting.
Unfortunately, it's just incredibly light.
Yeah.
Like the cards are just so incredibly simple that, you know, how much is there to be said about Sushi Go? Let's see. If we're talking about the flavor, and you mentioned it does have that sort of tension to it. I like that, flavorfully or mechanically, there is a high emphasis on being able to read your neighbors and having this direct interaction with your neighbors. You're receiving cards from one person, you're feeding cards into another. So, games can utilize that kind of proximity to bring a level of flavor to the game. To use Seven Wonders as an example, you are these neighboring civilizations. You're literally neighboring people. And so when you trade for resources and when you go to war, you're only trading with and going to war with the people directly to your left and to your right. So they emphasize that importance on knowing what your opponents are doing, especially because they're amassing war power sometimes, so you need to start amassing your own war power because you're concerned with that, and you need to stop passing them the good war power cards, you know. Mm-hmm. And you also, maybe you're okay with passing them some resource cards because, you know, you might be able to just borrow them in the future in case you need them. Might not be important. Or you might want to collect a lot of resource cards so that when they have to trade with you. These are just strategies of Seven Wonders, but these are examples of how they latched onto that whole neighbor focusing idea. So really any kind of situation, flavorfully, where you have to closely keep an eye on your neighbors, this is a good mechanic for a game like that. So, like, I mean, it's got neighbors in it. What if your neighbor's in a cul-de-sac or something? That could be funny. That's also a reason to be sitting in a circle.
Yeah. Another aspect of the flavor tied into the mechanic is just drafting.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, we mentioned the early examples were, like, fantasy team drafting for sports.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, why not do that for fantasy sports?
Or just any sort of situation where you need to literally just pick the best something out of a pool, like Sushi Go is with sushi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do that with a lot of themes. You can do that with power tools as you try to build a house or something. I don't know.
What if it's like like you're picking people for your kickball team? And you know how kind of like the wimpy person is the last person to get picked, yeah, and they get all bummed out, and then they grow up to be like Bill Gates or something?
Yeah.
What if that was a mechanic?
Legacy drafting?
The last person that you, or the last card that didn't get picked, it just becomes like really crazy good later in the game or something. That's a funny idea. There's also the physical passing of cards. I kind of interpreted Sushi Go like it's like the sushi restaurants where they have a conveyor belt, yeah, that's rotating the sushi in a circle. You know, that sort of direction, that movement is something that you could harness in your game's flavor.
I always like the idea of like there being like an espionage theme and you're passing like an envelope or like a dossier around,
mm-hmm,
that everybody's picking from.
Mm-hmm. You know,
which is sort of what Citadels does. It's like a list of advisors that you choose one from.
Mm-hmm. I like, you know, I don't think there's a lot of games that explore the passing direction as something, as a mechanical space to design in. You know, it's usually just you only pass one direction for one turn and then one direction for another turn until all the cards are gone. So that could be interesting where, mm-hmm, it's like instead you can switch the direction in the middle, like, of a draft or something. Yeah, like Uno. Yeah. I don't know. That could be kind of cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's also it's like deck building where you're amassing a collection of cards.
Mm-hmm.
So there's tons of, you know, ways that you could flavor that. You know, it just the generic, like you're a wizard collecting artifacts, like in Seasons, or you're, you know, doing whatever. You're collecting a team of people, you know, like in an actual draft.
So back to sort of the mechanical reasons why you'd have drafting. One thing I think is that it's more fun than dealing out cards.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it takes sort of like adds more building, game time.
It puts like a fun twist on an action that some games you just do before you can actually play the game.
And it gives you more agency too. Because,
mm-hmm,
so like in Agricola, I've seen people talk about drafting your occupations and all that instead of just dealing them out, because it lets you plan a strategy for the rest of the game a little more, even though it adds like 30 minutes to the game.
That's a good point. And it also kind of balances things for every player. Because rather than everybody having access to the same kinds of cards and only the player that makes the better card selection decisions, you know, over everyone else goes first, it's more like you all have equal opportunity to pick good cards. You know, it I don't know, it takes away less of the I don't know.
it's a very good way to introduce like simultaneous card playing and actions, mm-hmm, without having to have a timer because the way that players signify they're ready is they put their hand past to the left or whatever. And then everyone has a natural phase of the game where they can reveal their choice, which is sort of how Seven Wonders does it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So it should be noted that there's sort of two options, I think, in card drafting, how you do it in general, where one of them is you reveal the card you've selected immediately after you select it. So that's what Seven Wonders does, and that's what Sushi Go does. And then there's the option where you collect all the cards without showing anybody what you've picked, and then you reveal them all at once, or you pick them up in your hand and then you start playing a different game. And this kind of starts to lead into the discussion of how card drafting is very oftentimes used as a supplemental mechanic in a game. So
right. We
mentioned Seasons before. And did I say what who Seasons was designed by?
I don't think so.
Okay, yeah. Seasons was designed by Regis Bonasset, and it was published in 2012. And Seasons is, it uses card drafting at the beginning of the game to select certain, they're called power cards in the game, what you have access to, from the beginning. And then as you play through the game, sometimes you have the opportunity to draw more cards. But really, card drafting is used to supplement the rest of the gameplay, which is the everything that follows after you've drafted your cards. And most that's what takes up most of the gameplay time, is everything that follows the drafting. But drafting can be used, you know, like this supplemental mechanic very easily. We talked about how deck building has been used as a supplemental mechanic, and how it's in the game that we played, it was kind of lost. It didn't work as well because you were trying to do two things at once. You were trying to build a deck that could build a better deck, but you were also trying to build a deck that could do something else. So there was a lot of this balance. Whereas card drafting is always just like you draft and then you play with the cards that you've been given. So there's never this balancing act between the two mechanics. Card drafting is always done usually first, and then the rest follows.
Right. And there are starting to be more games in sort of the hobbyist sphere that involve card drafting along with other parts of the game. I know Eric Lang's Blood Rage is an example that we discussed at the game store we went to. And then there is also Terraforming Mars, designed by Jacob Fryzelius, that is also a very popular example of that sort of inclusion of a mechanic as well as card drafting.
Mm-hmm. And when you do this, it adds a little bit of that card drafting metagame, where you are, you know, you're managing your opponent's picks while you're managing your own picks, and you're slowly crafting a strategy for yourself, which can be a good thing. It can be like in the game we played, it can slowly introduce the mechanics. It can help you formulate a strategy before you actually get into the game.
Now, as a designer, one thing I like about drafting is that it guarantees specific cards being seen in the game. So, like, in a game with a shuffled deck, you might not go through the whole deck in any given game. Mm-hmm. But if there's a couple cards that are really powerful or really notable, important, or, like, fundamental to the game, you can do a card draft where every player, you know, has their hand and that's all the cards included in the game. And so you're guaranteed that one of those players will see that card and have it and end up being able to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty good. You can sort of hint at strategies that way, because in some games you might try to work in a strategy or a way of winning and it just doesn't always happen. But you can sort of help make it so that it's always an option for your
right.
players.
That's a good point. Like in Seven Wonders, the blue cards give you victory points, and I came up with the strategy of playing it where I only pick the blue cards. And if this were like a deck building, like a trade row deck building game, there's a chance that none of the blue cards show up. So that whole strategy that I crafted after playing a couple times is useless.
Right.
So it's nice that you have access to it every time. And as a designer, you can count on a lot of cards being available always. It like in Seven Wonders, you can always count on there being resources to play other cards.
Right. It lets you very easily make sure there's going to be diversity, which also helps because card drafting tends to support more players. Like, Seven Wonders is a 7-player game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just add another player with 7 cards in hand and they're another player. another thing, you'll see a good amount of games have, like, numbers on the cards that are, like, this is how many players you need to have in the game to include this card.
Mm-hmm. So and you like can manage the two sets plus, of cards.
Yeah.
Right.
So you can balance around having high amounts of players.
Again, a nice thing about card drafting games is you need a very little number of cards in order to play it. You know, technically the minimum is 2 plus the number of players. So there's a lot of ease that you have in, you know, not having to come up with a bunch of different ideas for cards and also not having to balance a bunch of different cards against one another. You only have to worry about balancing the cards that are in the game, which are very few.
Yeah. I know one thing I think is interesting with card drafting is in the games where card drafting is like the central mechanic, like most of the ones we've talked about, they're usually games that involve the opportunity cost being more important than the playing like resource cost of a given card. So, in drafting games like Seven Wonders, you have to pay resources for certain things, but it does mitigate that with, like, being able to trade with your neighbors and other things like that. But in, like, Sushi Go, the cost of a card is the opportunity cost. It's what you decided not to pick to pick that card. And I think that's interesting. It is something to keep in mind that, generally, the pure card drafting is sort of better suited for games that have low amounts of, like, different types of resources, and is usually found in games where there's, you know, one or two, just because the bigger important resources, like I said, what you're passing and what cards you can pass.
Mm-hmm. It's also nice to bake in these mechanics that reinforce certain drafting metagames strategies. Especially, like in Citadels, a lot of the cards have effects that involve you being able to predict what your opponents have drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another fun thing to add to the game. And it's easier in a game like Citadels with so few cards. But it's something to consider. I think one last gameplay experience thing that drafting adds to a game is it adds the surprise of the reveal, which is fun. Because it's like if it's a game where you haven't seen players' picks the whole time, and then, you know, like a game where you're drafting from a hand, the first card that everyone picks, only they know what it is. And so it might stick around. Like, I remember when we were playing Seasons, we played the game for a while until, boom, this card showed up that was worth a whole ton of points, and none of us had seen it before because none of us were able to draft it, or one of us drafted it first and none of us were aware of it, of its existence, until just then. And that was fun, a fun gameplay moment. And then there's also, like, in Seven Wonders, where you just, like, I picked, boom, this card. Like, even if you're revealing every round, it's still a fun little moment that happens.
Yeah, and I do gotta say, when I go to do a Magic draft, there's this distinct feeling I get when I open up the pack and start looking through it, like a switch is flipped and my engine's running and I'm like, okay, now I'm drafting.
Yeah, someone who's really into like a Johnny who's really into crafting these really interesting interactions between cards gets a lot of pleasure out of drafting, because it involves a lot of on the fly brewing of strategy and ideas within the game's rules. So it's like, oh, what can I do with this hand? Ooh, if I pick this card and this card gets passed around, or if I pick this card and somebody else passes me another card, I could do something really weird. And then if that doesn't happen, then it's like, okay, what can I do now? And then you're starting to work inside constraints, which is always fun for problem solvers.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about a lot of different games. Let's just go over some of the games that we mentioned in this episode. The specifically drafting games we mentioned, obviously Seven Wonders. We mentioned Sushi Go. We mentioned Nevermore.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned Citadels.
Citadels, which is a game that uses drafting as a mechanic, but not... It's the major mechanic.
Yeah.
And then we mentioned Seasons, which uses drafting. And one thing that Seasons did that I forgot to mention was that it it lists drafting as the first step in the rule book, as the important first step in the rule book, but it has alternate rules that just skips that and gives everybody a pre-built deck, which is sometimes an option.
Mm-hmm.
If you're designing a game that has drafting as a primary mechanic, maybe just to introduce people to the mechanics of the game and all the cards involved in the game, before actually having to make these important drafting decisions, you know, that's something you can do. Although I was honestly not a fan of it as someone who drafts a lot and who really enjoys drafting. You know, I'd rather just draft every single time and they not even mention that, or at least put it in the back of the book. And then let's see, Magic the Gathering. Love Letter was another game we mentioned.
Yeah.
Yep. So thanks for listening to our episode on card drafting.
Yeah.
We hope you got some pretty neat insights out of it. Let's see. So if you would like to follow us, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. We have a website where you can listen to our new episodes whenever we post them. That's bgbcast.com.
Yep.
Our friends have a website called entertainthegeeky.com where they host their own podcasts, which are Entertain the Geeky and Nerd News.
And soon they are launching a D&D podcast called Dungeons and Dumbasses. Excuse our language.
Excuse our language on that one. And you can find all those. They host our podcast, too, on their website. And also on their website, you can find the board games that we're selling. Currently, we're only selling one game, which is a one-page role-playing game called Merle's Truck Stop in Maine.
It is currently on sale for $1.
$1, and all the money we get from that is going to starting and publishing and printing our other games. We are next month, April, starting a Kickstarter, which next month should be like tomorrow.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Sometime in April, we're going to start a Kickstarter to really kick off our board game company. And with that Kickstarter, we are starting to publish our very first card game, which is called Conniving Cooks.
Conniving Cooks. It is a bluffing and deduction card game for about 2 to 6 players, in which players take the role of servers at a fancy restaurant trying to make sure they deliver the correct food to the correct attendants or attendees while tripping up the other players, getting them to mess up.
Serve them the right food and you win. Serve them the wrong food and you're fired.
Yep.
Yeah, so we're really excited to share that game with you, and we're really excited to publish it and share it with the world at large.
And we'll continuously post updates about that on our Twitter and Facebook pages.
So if you want updates, you can again follow us at BG Bros Cast on Twitter and Facebook. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Catch our April 1st and our first weekend in April episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up soon.
Coming up soon.